Psalm 68, verse 5 tells us this, "A father of the fatherless and a judge for the widows is God in his holy habitation." Well, good morning and welcome to Real Truth for Today. I'm your host, Pastor Jeff Shreve, the pastor of First Baptist Church in Texarkana, Texas, and the founder of From His Heart Ministries. And today, it is a great privilege to have in the studio my good friend, John Finch. John is the author and the producer of the film, The Father Effect. It is a story that is like none other. The first time I saw the movie, The Father Effect, I thought, well, I'll watch a few minutes. I watched the whole thing and was reduced to tears as the Lord used that to really minister to my heart. So, John, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me back, brother.
Yeah, well, I appreciate it. And you were here probably a year ago, maybe?
Man, it was probably about a year ago, I guess.
Yeah, it's been a while. And we talked about the movie in the book, but we want to review that because the subject of a father wound is so universal. It's almost as if you share that with people and everyone, even those that had a great experience with their father, they can relate to that on some level.
They can. You know, it's interesting when we interviewed several pastors and people that literally traveled the world globally. And I remember sitting in front of a man, Larry Titus, who had written several books and had a men's ministry. And he said, "John, you know, I've been all over the world and this subject matter's come up." And he said, "It does not matter where you're at, whether it's Africa, Brazil, Singapore, wherever it might be, this father wound, this fatherlessness, absent fatherism, if you will, mm-hmm. is an issue. And globally, it doesn't matter what culture, where you live, you know, how much money you make, does mm-hmm. not matter. It's an issue that's an epidemic globally."
Well, every child has a desire in his or her heart to be close to dad, mom and dad, but dad is a special figure because dad's big, dad's strong. Dad tends not to be around as much, so when he is in the home, it's, hey, dad's home. It's a big deal. I noticed this with my little grandson, Jack. He's a year and a half old. He loves his mom, but dad's like a superhero. And his dad is 6'5", and so he's big and he's strong. And a kid understands real quick, hey, dad's a lot bigger than mom. There's just something different about dad. And so you growing up, the youngest of three boys, your dad was larger than life too to you, wasn't he?
He was literally too. He was a big man. And so it's interesting because it's like I have faint memories of my father because mm-hmm. he passed away when I was 11. So it's like I had this little bit of a life with him that I have, very vague memories of. Mm-hmm. But what I do remember is literally he was physically larger than life. And in my eyes, he was larger than life man.
Well, and your mom's little.
She's tiny. Yeah, yeah. She's 5 foot, maybe 100 pounds.
Right. And your dad was six what?
He was probably 6'2", 280.
Yeah, and to a little kid, I mean, 6'2", 280 is a big man, but to a little kid, 6'2", 280 is, he's Hercules.
He is, and you know, to your point earlier, for me, the memories I have is as a young man crawling up in his lap and just wanting to be next to dad. I remember that smell even.
Right.
That smell of just the musty, uh-huh. you know, combination of a number of different things.
Right.
Right. But yeah, I wanted to be close to dad.
Right. Now, dad was a strong disciplinarian?
You know, it's interesting. He was when he was around. You know, uh-huh. I remember he wasn't around a whole lot. He traveled and was gone quite a bit. But when he was, this is something I struggled with too as a young father. You know, I'd be gone traveling and in sales, and I'd come home and I'd, you know, barge in the door, barking orders here, left, right, whatever. Yeah. And my wife would go, "Hold on a second, honey. You haven't been here all week."
Right.
You know, and that was kind of my dad. He would come in and try to set rules and, you know, expectations and discipline when he hadn't been there in sometimes weeks, mm-hmm. you know. And so that would cause, some friction between him and my mom from time to time.
Now, was your dad abusive?
No.
Okay. Did your dad drink?
He did. He was a big drinker. You know, and that's the interesting thing, too, in the distorted sense of what I thought a man was. He was a big drinker. I remember as a little kid seeing him drink. And I remember as I got older and as I became a teenager and as I began drinking myself, deep down it was like, this is part of what a man does because I saw my dad do it.
Right.
Right? So I thought that was part of becoming a man, that was my normal, right?
Well, your dad's your picture of manhood, right?
He is, absolutely.
And it's not a bad picture.
No,
it is what it is. That's what you think a man should be.
Yeah, and I think, you know, even when I was heavy into my drinking because I was medicating this father wound, right? I remember thinking my dad would be proud of me because I could drink so much beer just like him.
Mm. Wow. All right, so your dad is gone. As a kid growing up, he's gone like chunks of time or just like during the week he's gone home on the weekends?
It was pretty random. He had a lot of different issues, you know, from a mental health aspect. Back in that day, we didn't really do a lot, I don't think, from a society standpoint. Of course, you know, as a man, it was like, there's no way you're going to admit you had issues. You know, right. That you're going to see a counselor or whatever.
No,
you just didn't do that. So he struggled very heavily with depression, and I think there were several other things. So sometimes my mom tells a story, it's just bizarre behavior. He would get us into financial trouble. Our electricity would get shut off, our water would get shut off, whatever, because he had some gambling issues too. And he would disappear. My mom would scramble, get everything taken care of, money and all the bills paid. He would show back up sometimes weeks later and act like nothing ever happened.
Oh, okay. So there was never any resolution. It was just kind of, there were problems, but let's just act like they're not there.
Yeah.
So a lot of dysfunction growing up.
Lots of dysfunction, yeah.
Was your mom angry with your dad?
Oh, yeah. I think at times she was very angry with him.
But that wasn't like a bitterness that was just constantly there, or was it?
No. My mom she was really good at hiding a lot from us as young boys. Matter of fact, so much so that, you know, as I began this journey, I was 41 years old. Well, I didn't know any of the story that now is in the book, right? And that's in the movie. It was in conversations of the journey God was taking me on when I found forgiveness for my father that I started asking my mom all these questions. This is the first time we had talked about any of this stuff. That's when I came to realize that we had been in witness protection. You know, there was all these things that were coming out, and I'm like, whoa, hold on a second. It was kind of hard to believe.
So your dad was involved with the mob.
He was.
And that's what got you into witness protection. He was doing the books for the mob, or what was the story?
He was
there?
Running a counterfeiting operation. So he had met, according to my mom, she believes he had met a couple of guys at the dog track. Because again, he was a gambler and mm-hmm. liked to gamble. And so she thinks he met a couple of guys. And my dad always struggled with that quick, easy money.
Mm.
Right, it wasn't the sense of let's work hard, let's stay with a job for a certain length of time and do those things that a lot of guys do. So he was just always after that quick buck, and this just opened the door to that. And so he got wrapped up with them and started running a counterfeiting operation and was busted stepping off a plane in Memphis, Tennessee by the FBI.
And then he went to prison for a couple years, right?
He was here in Texarkana for a little over a year, I believe. But as he was here, he was actually going back and testifying against some of the other mafia guys. And so what had happened was...
That'll get you killed, huh?
Well, yeah. As a result, they lessened his sentence. And he did about a year. When they released him, the FBI approached and said, hey, there's four names on a hit list. Your name's one of them. The other three guys are dead. And so that's when they said, hey, you know, you can go it alone or we can put you in witness protection. So they put us in witness protection and we got flown to Fort Knox.
Okay, but you didn't change your name or anything, right?
They changed their name while we were at Fort Knox to Smith, of all names.
Okay.
Yeah. And then we were there for about, I believe, 13, 14 months. And then the FBI had said, look, there's some other guys that are higher ups that have turned state's witness. And we really think you're okay now. Mm-hmm. So we left Fort Knox and literally moved to Texas to start a new life.
You were how old at that time?
I was about 3.
Okay, so this is all just stuff you'd been told. You don't remember any of this.
No. You know, what's interesting, though, is I remember having this, what I thought was a reoccurring dream. And this was all the way up into, you know, I was a young man. And there was this, I just had this thing that kept coming back, that somebody in the middle of the night had come and absconded our family, and there was this craziness. Well, I, at one point, as God had started me on this journey, I was having these great conversations with my mom. I kind of asked her about it. She goes, well, you know, we were taken in the middle of the night by the FBI. I was like, wait, what? She said, yeah, when they came to get us, it was in the middle of the night, and they said, literally, grab a trash bag. Whatever you can put in a trash bag is all you're taking. Let's go.
Okay, so how old are your brothers?
They are 6 and 7 years older than me.
Okay, so they remember all this stuff.
They do. They remember it a lot better than I do. Yeah, when my dad died, I was in 5th grade, so I was 11, and they were 17, 18, still in high school.
And if I remember correctly, John, like with your oldest brother, your dad was a little physical with him?
He was. Yeah, my oldest brother, there was something, so a lot of men, a lot of fathers, if you will, they tend to really get drawn to one child, especially when it comes, I think, to boys. And so for whatever reason, my dad kind of got drawn to my middle brother because he was the athlete. Mm-hmm. He was really talented.
And your dad was a football player.
My dad was a football player. And so my oldest brother wasn't that athlete. And so he kind of just, you know, there wasn't a lot of affirmation there. Let me put it that way.
Probably not much in common.
Right.
So he's more artistic, maybe softer, and just his
theater,
personality.
Choir, those type of things.
Yeah. So would your dad discipline him hard then?
You know, I don't recall. I know they got into it because I think of my dad's feelings towards him. I think he probably treated him differently because he saw him as different, right? And he really didn't, I don't think, had a lot of, in common with him. He couldn't relate to him because of the things he was interested and talented at. And it wasn't that space of where my dad felt comfortable.
Yeah. So is now your oldest brother, he was close to your mom?
Yes. Very close to my mom.
Right. And so he's still alive today?
He is. He lives with my mom, matter of fact.
Oh, does he really?
He's been taking care of my mom for many, many years for us, yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay, so he no doubt had a big, pretty big father wound.
He did, yeah. And I think, you know what's interesting? All of us did. And all of us, interestingly enough, we dealt with it in different ways, right? And that itself
He's seen the movie.
Yes.
Did he appreciate the movie? Did he resonate with that?
He did. I think both my brothers have seen it. And, you know, when we first went to release it, that was the first thing I did before we released it on TV. It was, okay, let's sit down as a family. And what's interesting is that's the first time we had talked about so much of the stuff. Because we didn't really, the thing with my dad, it was, I think we were afraid to bring it up because the emotional piece it may play out in my mom's life. So we just kind of skirted around it and really never talked about it until I did the movie. And it was me, my two brothers, and my mom sitting in my living room. And I kind of did the initial viewing. And we sat and talked for hours after that. And I learned stuff about my dad even then that I didn't know. And how my brothers had dealt with it, right? And to some extent, we're still dealing with it.
Well, the movie starts out with you as a little boy, and your dad takes you to school, and then he drives to a secluded place and kills himself. And that was what you had to deal with as a family, the suicide of my father, and not knowing all the things that were going on in his mind and his heart. It's just, you're left with this, and their financial issues and all that goes with the dad not being there. Well, you're listening to Real Truth for Today, and I'm your host, Pastor Jeff Shreve, and we're talking to my good friend, John Finch, about the father effect. John made a powerful 60-minute movie and then wrote a book with that same title, and you can find out more by going to thefathereffect.com. And we are up against a break, but we will be right back. Don't go away as we hear more of this fascinating story.
Sometimes you see a win, a glimpse of God in this broken world. Preborn rejoices in the overturning of Roe v. Wade. Preborn's mission is to love and help women in unplanned pregnancies by offering them the truth to help them make the right choice by providing free ultrasounds. You see, when an expectant mom hears her baby's heartbeat and sees the image of her baby on ultrasound, she's seeing a life created in God's image, and it's a divine connection.
And I got to hear and see my baby for the first time. Hearing the heartbeat made me cry, and it was certain that I was going to keep my baby forever.
To learn more about Preborn's life-saving work, go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com, or dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 and say baby. All gifts are tax deductible. Your love can save a life.
The core of all of the difficulty that we endure here as human beings, it comes down to this: God's word or man's word. One of the major features that has contributed to this degradation of society in our country, in America in particular, is that we have lost our understanding of the transcendent, surpassing glory of God.
Tune in to the Hamilton Corner, weekdays at 5 p.m. Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Gaffney, host of Securing America, a program dedicated to protecting the country we love against all enemies, foreign and domestic, to the glory of God and His kingdom. Each weeknight at 11 p.m. Eastern Time, we provide insights and recommendations about the most important challenges facing our nation from her most thoughtful experts and patriots. Join me to learn how you can help in Securing America right here at 11 p.m. Eastern Time.
Persecuted believers in Asia, they love their enemies and they count it all joy to suffer for the Lord. This is Bible League International. Abir is a former Islamic leader in Bangladesh. When he became a believer, he was beaten, verbally abused, his home was vandalized, he was forced to move to another city, and he was labeled a traitor. But he holds to the precious promises of God he reads every day in his Bible.
I asked Abir, you were beaten, you were cast out. It's so easy to hate people that do this to you. He said, no, I love them.
Most of us here in America cannot relate to the level of persecution that Christians like Abir in Bangladesh and others throughout Asia are facing on a daily basis. Let's send them the word of God they need and crave to be able to endure and persevere. And that's why we're holding this campaign, Fan the Flame. $5 sends a Bible, $100 sends 20, every gift matched. Call 800-YES-WORD, 800-YES-WORD, or give it sendbiblesnow.org, sendbiblesnow.org, and God bless you for caring.
Welcome back to Real Truth for Today. Pastor Jeff Shreve here talking to my good friend, John Finch. John is the author of the book, The Father Effect. He's the producer of the movie, The Father Effect. And John, tell us how the movie and the book came into being, because you are a guy, husband, three kids, salesman, you're a natural salesman, you're good with people, you're on the road a lot, you're drinking a lot, and you don't really know what's going on inside, why you are the way you are. So,
yeah, there was a point in time, and I tell people all the time, I was having too much fun running from God. And I remember thinking, it was a trip I'd taken to Nashville, Tennessee, and I used to go out there. There was a guy that was a customer of mine, and he was also an alcoholic, right? A social alcoholic. And we got to where we wouldn't go to his facility. We'd just meet down the strip and we'd start drinking. And so this one time, we literally met down the strip about 4 p.m. and we drank all night. I remember getting to my hotel, back to my hotel about 4 a.m. And I thought, you know what? I got to catch an early flight, get a couple hours sleep. And so I get in the rental car and I'm driving to the airport. And I remember thinking, I'm still drunk. Mm. If I get pulled over right now, I'm going to lose everything, right? So the prayer that I had prayed 1,000 times before, God, if you just help me get to the airport, I'll never do this again. Mm. Knowing full well that I would do it again. But in that moment, it was just, please help me. But I remember just saying out loud to God, God, you're going to have to slap me upside the face to get my attention, because I'm just not getting it. I knew my behavior was not right, right? Was very dysfunctional and destructive. So it was literally about 3 months later that he slapped me upside the face, and I just, there was this, had been taken to this place of very incredible brokenness, and my life was falling apart. My marriage wasn't good. I wasn't the dad I needed to be. I was having health issues. It was all these things that just kind of came. It was the perfect storm.
And you're 41, 42?
I'm 41. Mm-hmm. Yeah, 41. So I remember finally just saying, okay, Lord, I'm in. I'm all in. For the first time in my life, I totally surrendered and said, okay, God, you're all I have. I got nothing else. Mm-hmm. I can depend on no one else. And I need help with this idea of a father wound.
Okay, so John, do you think that was the time of your salvation, or do you think you were saved as a young boy?
So I was saved and baptized when I was like 9. Mm-hmm. So to whatever extent a 9-year-old can really, you know, understand that and know it. But I would say at 41 years old was my true salvation. Mm-hmm. It was when I fully, totally surrendered. And that's when God started doing this transformation that, and my wife will tell you, she saw it mm-hmm. in a way that nobody else did, right?
Your wife's a trooper, because a lot of wives would have said, I'm done.
I am very blessed that she did not walk away. You know, after I started, after I had found forgiveness from my father, and God was doing these amazing things in me and through me, and God, you know, was just had truly transformed my life. I think my wife was sitting kind of going, okay, I know he says he's changed, mm-hmm. but I'm going to sit and watch. Well, she saw it pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. And I remember asking her, I said, you know, darling, it was about a year into it. I said, you know, what's your biggest regret? And she said, you know, my biggest regret is that the John Finch I know today is not the John Finch I knew for the first 14 years of our marriage. Mm-hmm. So, of course, that's bittersweet, but it was very sweet mm-hmm. in the sense that I finally got it. There's a lot of men that never do, right? That can just continue that path. And so just thankful that God got my attention and made me realize some things.
Okay, so you met your wife when you were in college?
Out of college. I was 26 and she was 25.
Okay, but you were going to church, and you weren't drinking a whole lot back then, were you? Or
I was.
Oh, you were?
She
knew that?
She did. I had started drinking in high school, and in college it was really, you know, my thing was.
Now, you're Baylor Bear, right?
I am. Yeah, of all places.
You're not supposed to drink at Baylor, are you?
Yeah. Well, here's the interesting thing is, I really didn't hang around the Baylor people. I was hanging around all the community college guys because I didn't feel like I belonged there, right? I came from a very poor family. Most of those people were very wealthy. Mm-hmm. So there were several different factors there. But it was, I was really good at posing. Right? Mm-hmm. I was the guy who, for most of my life, up till I was 41 years old, I was the guy who was living this total different life on the road. But when I was home, you would have thought I was this great Christian guy who read his Bible every day, took his kids and wife to church, mm-hmm. and I was going through the motions, right? Again, for me, I was really getting high on the game mm-hmm. of being somebody totally different on the road than I was at home. And it was a thrill to me. It literally was a high to play that game and pretend to be somebody I wasn't.
Well, a lot of guys do that. A lot of being in sales, outside sales like that, where you're traveling salesman, I think the danger with that is you can be two different people, and you're anonymous in these towns. And so the drinking, the strip clubs, if prostitutes enter into the picture, as they do with so many guys like that, or even as we read about guys having a whole different life, a different family. You know, a regular job that doesn't take you out of town, well, that doesn't afford you those things. I mean, everybody knows who you are. And so talk a little bit about that, John, because if you had worked at a hardware store, you wouldn't have had those kind of temptations.
Yeah, no, I had, this is how distorted and warped my mentality was. I actually came up with these great stories to pretend to be somebody on the road in these bars that I wasn't. I remember, it's interesting, back in college, I had this friend, this cousin of mine, who we'd always go out with and go drinking with, and he told me one time, he said, man, you know you look like you could be? And I said, who? He said, Terry Bradshaw's son. And I was like, really? So as I'm...
You do look like that.
Yeah, as I'm married and out on the road, I start thinking about that. So I start telling people in the bars, I'm Terry Bradshaw's son.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I start developing all these stories, all these fantasies in my mind about how wealthy I am, how successful I am, what I do for a living. And again, that was this. There was this high in that,
mm-hmm.
in just pretending to be somebody I wasn't. And I was really, really good at it, right? I had a friend of mine tell me after this transformation, and I had gone to share some of my story with him, and he said, John, he goes, dude, I'd have never imagined. He goes, I thought you were the picture of success, the picture of an ideal family, the white picket fence, all of the things mm-hmm. that you portrayed that you were, mm-hmm. right? So, again, I was really good at pretending to be somebody.
Well, and you had a lavish expense account, so you could present yourself as a high roller.
Oh, yeah. I had an unlimited expense account. So, my thing was walking in bars by myself. Not with other people, just by myself. And I would buy a round of drinks for the whole bar at times, right? Because mm-hmm. I could spend any amount of money I wanted to. And this is how distorted my view of what real manhood was all about. There was a gentleman's club there in Dallas. And I remember one night I had a customer, and he was really big in gentlemen's clubs. And every time we went out, it was he wanted to go there. And I remember one night I spent $5,000 on him at this gentleman's club. And I remember walking out afterwards and like just blowing up my chest, puffing up my chest, because I thought that's what a real man was. The fact that I had spent $5,000 at a gentleman's club.
Mm-hmm.
That I'd finally made it.
And that's really a misnomer, because there are no gentlemen in there.
Absolutely not.
Just a bunch of lust-filled guys.
Absolutely.
And miserable women. And it's a horrible reality. It paints the picture of this is so wonderful, so fun, but it's not.
Well, and you know what's ironic about that is we interviewed a former exotic dancer in the movie, and the majority, she said, John, 90%+ of the women I knew in that industry. Now she goes back and rescues women out of that industry. She said, it's all because of a father issue.
Mm.
Her own story was, she loved the attention from men because she didn't get it from a father. Her father was divorced from her mom and lived in a different state. And this gets back to that, we as a father are a reflection of what our kids believe God to be, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're setting that picture of what our kids believe God to be. And she said, my dad was over there in this other state, so I just kind of went to him if I really needed him. But if I didn't really need him, I wouldn't really go to him. Well, she said, that's the way I looked at God.
Mm. Mm. Okay, so the turning point for you, if I remember correctly from the movie, you're playing golf, and tell us how the guy comes up with, you grew up without a father. So what led up to that?
So I had a good friend of mine, and he was a believer that lived across the street from me, and we would have these long conversations. And one day we go out and play golf, and I'm sharing with him some of my struggles, the alcohol and some of the things I was dealing with. And I'll never forget, he turns to me, he said, you grew up without a dad, right? And I said, yeah. And I went on to give him this great 10-minute explanation about how amazing my mom is. And you've actually met her. She is.
Right.
Just an angel on earth. And then he turns to me and he says, but was she a dad? And that's when it's the first time I'd ever been asked that question. And that hit me just like a gut punch, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I remember walking away from the golf course that day. He had explained to what a father wound was, and I didn't even know that. I was like,
explain that. Explain that.
So, you know, a father wound is something a dad does or doesn't do or says or doesn't say, right? So it's a dad who maybe is verbally or physically abusive. Maybe he says, you'll never amount to anything. You know, you're worthless. Those type of that verbal assault. And it gets imprinted upon a young man or young woman's life. Or maybe it's a dad that's there physically, but just not there emotionally. And he lives in the same home, but doesn't spend time with his kids. Maybe he's into muscle cars or golf or whatever his hobby is. And his kids see that as more important than they are, right? He's not engaged, not involved. So it plays itself out in hundreds of different ways, actually. And once he explained that to me, it hit me. I was like, oh my gosh, this is it. This is my thing. This is what has haunted me for all these many years. And so I left the golf course that day thinking, I was relieved because it was finally, there was a name to this thing that I had. I wasn't just some strange, weird dude that couldn't figure this thing out, right? Mm-hmm. There was a name for it. So even though I felt relieved, I walked away from the golf course. It still took me about 2 years because I was in denial, thinking I could do it on my own. Mm-hmm. I could man up and figure it out. And it was about 2 years later then that moment of God taking me to that place and my real transformation began.
Okay, so the in the car, God don't let me get pulled over because I'll get a DWI and lose my job and all. Was that the trigger for the surrender?
That was the beginning. So it was about, I knew something, there was something to this idea of a fatherhood. I just knew it deep within me, right? And I think God was convicting me that, dude, this is it. Mm-hmm. Come on, brother. But it still took me about 3 months to figure it out. And then that's when everything came to a head. And I think it had to. God, for me, again, I was having too much fun running. And I had this unlimited expense account. I was living all of this successful, quote unquote, worldly life that you could imagine as a man, mm-hmm. and what I thought and believed was success and power and all the other things. And it was God really just taking me to that point where I had to get on my knees to figure it out.
We're talking to John Finch. He is the author of the movie and the book, The Father Effect, and his website is thefathereffect.com. And so, John, did you realize that you were a functioning alcoholic?
You know, I think toward the end, I began to understand that there was just something there that I wasn't dealing with. There was something deeper. You know,
because you longed to go on the road where you could drink, right?
I did. I tell the story. There were nights where I was giddy and could not sleep the night before because I knew I was going to be getting drunk the next night. And so I literally would stay awake all night because I was so excited. And again, part of it was also playing that game. Not only was I going to get drunk, I was going to pretend to be some new guy that I had developed.
Right? You're Terry Bradshaw's son.
That's it. But the biggest thing for me, too, was also the abandonment piece, right? I struggled a lot with commitment early on with girls in college and things of that nature because people with abandonment issues and betrayal issues, if you will, with their fathers really struggle with commitment because it becomes, well, you know what? They're going to leave me. Let me leave them first. Mm-hmm. So then I don't get hurt again. You know, we don't let people very close. We don't let them all the way in mm-hmm. because we know they're going to hurt us, or that's our mentality. Mm-hmm. So most people with abandonment or betrayal wounds, if you will, from their father are going to only let you a certain way in. And then most likely they're going to break that relationship off before you can because they don't want to get hurt.
Mm, that's for sure. Well, as you dealt with that, and so God used a lot of pieces. So that friend that said you grew up without a father, when did the light really come on that said, okay, I am bitter toward my dad, and I'm going to need to forgive him? That was through a counselor?
It was. I had a counselor, Dr. Tom, and he was just such a loving, encouraging guy, but yet called me out on my stuff, right, when he knew I was bluffing or lying. And there, I went to him for about 12 weeks, and there was a time probably about the 8th or 9th week. I couldn't go to that session without weeping every week because I couldn't even say the word dad because of what it meant to me in my life, right? I couldn't understand the concept. I was so mad and angry because I couldn't understand why he left me, why he abandoned me. I was mad at God because he allowed my dad. You know, in my mind, that's all the things that were going on. And so in one of those sessions, I was listening to him to some degree talk, but it was kind of like the TV shows where you kind of wonder. And in the midst of one of those, he's talking and I'm kind of not really listening, I feel this impression of God just saying, how can you be so bitter, resentful, and angry towards a man who doesn't know how to be a dad? Mm. And it was that. It was that. Everything. It was some things working up to that, but it was ultimately that thing God took and showed me forgiveness.
Amen. John Finch, The Father Effect. You can find out more at thefathereffect.com. That's his website, the book, the movie, They are powerful. Don't go away.
What does the American Family Association stand for?
AFA upholds the truth that all human beings, including the unborn, are created in the image of God and are worthy of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
These values and more are part of our mission to inform, equip, and activate individuals to strengthen the moral foundations of our culture. We also support the church. We want to be a leading organization in biblical worldview training for cultural transformation. Thank you for standing with us.
And running down, I missed the last two steps, and I fell and broke my back. And I did not have to have surgery.
Have you ever been encouraged by AFR?
I tell you, it's a miracle how that was.
Whether it's a life-changing event or just a helpful voice in your day, we'd like to hear how AFR has been there for you. Call 877-876-8893 and tell us your story. That's 877-876-8893.
Praise the Lord and thank God for AFR.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Evidence is accumulating that the Chinese Communist Party is poised to add a shooting war to the pre-kinetic, unrestricted warfare against America in which it has long engaged. Increasingly shrill rhetoric about the United States, including Foreign Minister Chin Gang's recent comment that conflict is inevitable if we do not change course, is being accompanied by, among other things, the stand-up of defense mobilization offices across China. Center for Security Policy expert Dr. Bradley Thayer says dictator Xi Jinping is preparing his people for the sacrifices associated with a long conventional or even a nuclear war with the United States. He believes that will entail violent action against the American homeland, not just our friends' interests and assets in the Western Pacific. U.S. leaders' failure to warn our people of this danger and act now to deter it is criminally malfeasant. This is Frank Affney.
Here at the AFA Foundation, we help families just like yours shore up permanent income for their retirement years through our charitable gift annuities.
AFA Foundation's Associate Director, Chelsea Wildman.
We would love to work with you to see if a charitable gift annuity is right for your situation. With a charitable gift annuity, you'll be giving to the culture-transforming work of the American Family Association, and you'll be ensuring that you receive a lifetime income and excellent tax benefits. You can fund a CGA through cash, credit card, or stock. Why not reach out to the AFA Foundation team today?
A charitable gift annuity benefits you and helps ensure the AFA will impact America for generations to come. Call 800-326-4543, extension 345. That's 800-326-4543, extension 345.
Give us a call and let's talk about a charitable gift annuity.
Welcome back to Real Truth for Today. Pastor Jeff Shreve here talking to John Finch, the author and the producer of the book and the movie The Father Effect. You can go to thefathereffect.com to pick up a copy of the book, to watch the movie, and to avail yourself of some free resources there on John's website. And so, John, as we left at the break, you got to the place where you saw, I need to forgive my dad. This is at the core. I have a father wound. This is at the core. My dad wasn't a perfect dad, but he didn't know how to be a dad. And he ended up killing himself because he didn't know how to handle the difficulties of life.
You know, that's the key right there, right? For me, it was piecing my dad's story together through these long conversations with my mom. It was a process, right? But it was ultimately coming to this one thing, understanding that my dad could not give what he did not have, right? So understanding he grew up without a stable father figure. His mom was married 5 times, mm-hmm. never had a role model, if you will.
Well, she basically kicked him out when he was, what, 16?
16, yeah, to live on his own in the middle of New Orleans. She had kicked him out, and then she went on the road with a truck driver who was her next husband. So that's what it came down to for me. It was literally understanding my dad's story and his dad's story, right? This generational thing mm-hmm. that was being passed down. And I had to be the one to step up and say, okay, that generational curse stops here. Mm-hmm. I'm breaking the cycle. I'm breaking the chain, right? That's not going to go on in my life and in my generation, those that follow me. But it was God using, connecting the dots of me seeing my father for who he really was. He was a flawed, imperfect man, wounded man, just like me, right? So in a way, we were brothers.
Right.
Because we lived a lot of the same things and had a lot of the same issues.
Okay, so John, picking up on something you said earlier, so you had that total surrender at, 41, 42? Mm-hmm. Before that time, you had been, quote-unquote, saved and baptized and went through the church and went through the motions and all. There are a lot of guys like that have never really surrendered. Explain the difference for them, because I've maintained this for a long time. A lot of people have religion, they have churchianity, they don't have a relationship with Jesus because they've never surrendered.
Yeah, so for me, it was, again, growing up in the church, I knew how to play the game, and I was really, really good at it, right? Like my brother was kind of my mentor after my dad died, and he's been such a...
My
middle brother, yeah. And he has walked with the Lord for many, many years and so solid and such a great influence for me. And he would call me in college when I was out doing my drinking and partying. And he asked me, how you doing? How's your walk going? And I knew what to say. You know, and I'm sure there were times he knew that I was lying, but I knew how to play that game. I'd tell him whatever it is I thought he wanted to hear to make him feel like I was going to church and in small groups and doing all this other stuff. So... you know, I knew how to play the game because I was so close to the game. And I'd seen it at church too, right? I knew people that were pretenders. I knew those people that would talk this amazing talk and yet not on Sundays. It was out drinking and partying and living a whole different life based on what you saw them to appear to be on Sundays. So for me, it was radical life change. And I had this longing to read the Word probably for the first time ever. To really read the Word and to know God in a way that I never knew him before. I had this desire, right, to walk with a father, a heavenly father who I never really knew. I'd heard about in church and you know, you hear all these things and you just kind of go along with it and whatever. But it was for the first time I wanted a relationship and I wanted a closeness with him that I never wanted before. And I got that. I saw for the first time ever that I had a father. You know, he was in front of me the whole time for 41 years. But yet I wasn't acknowledging him. And it was when I finally got into a personal relationship with him that my desires changed, my want to change. You know, I had an old pastor friend of mine. He's like, you know, you find God, you find a relationship with Jesus, your want to changes. And that's what happened.
Yeah, that's how you know it's real. It's like, okay, I can't stay the same person, you know? And it's not just gritting my teeth and trying harder and not cuss, not drink, not lust, not lie. It's, there's something changed inside of me. And I knew, I was a 17-year-old high school senior when I gave my life to Christ. And man, it was like, okay, this is not church. This is, something's different inside. And it was my attitude towards sin was totally different. Whereas I could still sin, but I couldn't sin and enjoy it. It was like, this is wrong. I need to quit doing this.
And well, and you feel that the experience itself, you feel the presence of the Holy Spirit. And that was something I had never done before. I remember growing up in church and hearing Holy Spirit, Holy Spirit, Holy Spirit. I was like, well, that's whatever. You know, that's kind of that wacky stuff. That's a little far out there for me or whatever.
Right.
But it was only when, again, I started this journey because I was so desperate for God too at the same time, right? And he came to rescue me.
Okay, so John, the surrender and the forgiveness, so surrendering to Christ and forgiving your dad, is that all at the same time or is there a gap there?
There was a gap there. There was a gap in the sense that I think right before I found forgiveness is when God really had started to transform my heart, right? Because I finally totally surrendered to him. And so there's a different desire even in that as I began the journey. And I think I was more open to the ideas of forgiveness once God had changed my heart, right? So the journey became so much more real and easy, I would say easier for me, because I think God had taken me to this place where he knew, okay, now I got John where I need him. Now I'm going to show his dad for who he is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the grace, the mercy, the love, the forgiveness, that we have a trustworthy God, a gracious God, a loving, forgiving God. Mm-hmm. I never knew that before. And that's what God had started to do before I started the real journey on forgiveness.
And so when all those things happened, then your desire for the alcohol was just not there anymore, right?
Disappeared. Literally, you know, John Eldridge does this great piece in the movie, and we talk about this in the book too, that he says, you know, we can go get prescriptions for things, we can do all this thing, continue to put a Band-Aid on whatever it is we're struggling with, medicating, if you will. And I was medicating this wound, right, this anger and all these things I was dealing with because of my dad. But he said, until we get to the root of that, we can continue to medicate, and we're going to. Get to the root of why you're hurting. Get to the root of why this father wound thing.
Mm-hmm.
Get to the root of it and heal it. Then you don't need the medication anymore. There's no longer a reason to medicate because that thing's gone.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you had mentioned about the anger. How did your anger express itself? Because you weren't getting into bar fights. And you didn't really fight with your wife.
No, my anger was more of a frustrated anger, but it would spill out over to my family, right? It would be, I would have to repair maybe a flapper on a toilet, and I would struggle because I didn't know how. Mm-hmm. And so where that would then go is,
my dad never taught me.
Why is he not here? You know, I cannot believe. It would be another reminder of why, of abandonment.
Mm-hmm.
Of he left. Mm-hmm. He just bailed. So that would then turn into, and I still even struggle to this day. And sometimes there's things that I think I should be able to do as a man,
mm-hmm.
and I can't. You know, I'm the least handy man there is anywhere, right?
Me too.
Yeah.
Me too.
And when I can't do those things that I think every man should be able to, then I get frustrated and disappointed. And then that will then, I'll, you know, walk out of the bathroom from not being able to fix the flapper, and then I may get in a fight with my wife.
Mm-hmm.
It has nothing to do with her. It's my own stuff. Or right. I may yell at my kids. It has nothing to do with them. It's I'm dealing with this other deep junk that I hadn't gotten rid of, and that's what I dealt with a lot early on because of the anger.
So the movie, the Father Effect, when I watched it, you know, I think one of the things that it does do, it brings to light the fact that many of us, that is the issue, and we're not seeing it. So we see these symptoms, but we don't know, okay, it's like the old illustration, you got cobwebs. Well, Lord, clean out the cobwebs. It's like, no, Lord, kill the spider. So I have to find the spider. And for many people, the spider is, you have a wound, you're holding your father captive because he didn't do this, or he did some hurtful things. You know, you have sins of omission, sins of commission. So what he committed, maybe he was abusive. Maybe he told me things, you're no good, you'll never amount to anything, and those sting and stay with you. Or he was just never there. Because the movie does a great job exposing that, you know, and you're not saying, well, this is your problem. You're saying, you may have this problem, and you have to be honest enough to say, okay, search me, O God, know my heart, try me and know my anxious thought. Is this my issue?
Yeah. And you know what, Eldridge, so we say in the movie, I think it's 9 out of 10 people have a father wound. And that was a research study that was done, I think, back in like 2007. And Eldridge would argue with that, and he'll say, no, you don't get through this world not wounded. He'll say 10 out of 10 people have a father wound.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he said, because we're imperfect as fathers, we are going to wound our children. I've wounded my kids,
mm-hmm.
because I've got my stuff, right? I'm a sinful man.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've wounded my kids to some degree. And the forgiveness piece, really, ultimately, it's not about them. You're forgiving for you. You know, we did this. There's the great story in the movie with Larry North, and I may have shared this before, but it's such a powerful piece where his dad was a gambler and lived in Las Vegas, and he got cancer, and he goes out to Vegas, brings him back to Dallas, and he's in pretty bad shape. And he tells the nurse, hey, the VA hospital, you know, my dad's here. Give me a heads up if something happens. So he says, sure enough, you know, in a few weeks, he gets a call, and the nurse says, hey, Larry, you need to get down here. It doesn't look good for your dad. So he drops everything, runs down there, and he says he goes busting in the room, and his dad's just passed out. He grabs his dad's hand. He says, Dad, I forgive you. I love you. He says all these things that he's always wanted to say, and he truly meant them. He says he walks out of the room, and he says, the nurse walks up to him. She's got tears rolling down her eyes, and she said, you know, I'm sorry, Larry. I meant to tell you, but I just couldn't. Your dad passed away about an hour ago. And he said, you know what? I didn't do that for him. I did that for me.
Mm-hmm.
I did that for me. It was the best thing I've ever done. So that forgiveness and the way it plays out, the unforgiveness really, is the anger. You know, my there's a lot of men and women that are angry and don't know why. And when I'm able to have those kind of conversations, it's interesting how then it comes, they start thinking about a few things and God starts connecting the dots.
So in, because men and women are different and sons and daughters are different. So a father wound in a boy versus a father wound in a girl, what would you say you've seen is the difference?
So boys will typically, you know, they deal with it a little different. Both boys and girls will sometimes addiction. Again, because they're medicating a wound. So it'll play out the, kind of the same there. But guys, a lot of times, it'll be, well, I'm going to go be incredibly successful. They're driven. And I mean, a lot of very successful people, high-profile people, the Steve Jobs of the world, he has a story, right? The Dennis Rodmans, the Barack Obamas, there's a lot of them that were incredibly successful and driven because they wanted to show a dad who abandoned him.
I do matter.
I can make it on my own, brother.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way I was. Mm-hmm. That's what drove me, right? Mm-hmm. So there. It also, they'll jump into muscle, bodybuilding. I'm going to, you know, I need, again, affirmation. Mm-hmm. I didn't get it from my father. I'm going to go get it somewhere. And that's the, that was me. So they'll get into muscle building because they want, you know, women to like them and they want all the affirmation. With girls, typically it plays out in promiscuity.
Mm-hmm.
If a father's not there to give a girl the things that she needs, like you are loved, cherished, valued, I'm proud of you, I believe in you, all of those things, and that the daughter sees it and knows it, and that the father tells them and shows them, right? If they don't get that, they're going to go find that fatherly love from somebody. And in most cases, it's their first boy that gives them any kind of attention.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't turn out well.
No, it doesn't at all. Well, okay, John, we have just about a minute and a half left. So tell our listeners where they can get a copy of the book, where they can watch the movie.
So the book is available. The paperback is available at thefathereffect.com. And we're giving away a lot of freebies that go along with that. You can get a copy of the movie for free, an ebook, and some other unedited videos we did with John Eldridge and Dr. Meg Meeker. And then the movie, the 60-minute movie version, is available for free on YouTube. The one we have on the website's a little extended version, about 93 minutes.
Okay. And how many hits have you gotten on YouTube with the movie?
Wow. You know what? We're up to probably 20-something thousand. Mm-hmm. We've only had it on there, I think, a couple of years now. We released, I think, Father's Day a couple of years ago. So, yeah, God continues to do amazing things with it.
Well, I will say from personal experience, when you watch that, just know that it is going to hit you hard in your emotions, and it's very easy to start weeping. And even if you had the best of father experiences, it's going to hit you at some level. So, hey, John, thank you so much for being my guest today. You're a great friend, and I appreciate all that the Lord has doing in you and has done in you. So God
bless
you.
Thank you, brother. I greatly appreciate you, man.
All right. Well, hey, go out, make it a great day, shine for Christ, and share what great things the Lord has done for you, and God will use you as His witness. God bless you.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.